On the line from Kennebunkport, Ray Fowler, beautiful part of the country, a lot of snow, I bet.
Yes, yes, we've had snowstorm after snowstorm, and I guess we have another one coming next week. But we like cross-country skiing and snowshoeing, so we're making the best of it.
We're talking with Ray Fowler here, and he has a book, Synchrophile, and it's about... why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what it's all about? It's an interesting phenomenon you write about.
Well, it's about many things. My life has been full of amazing coincidences. I decided about 10, 11 years ago that I would start recording these things to see if I could make sense of them, because some of them were so fantastic. And I realized there was an interest in synchronicity out there in the world, and I decided to write a book about it. But it's all about, a lot about unidentified flying objects and the possible relationship to other paranormal phenomena, such as near-death experiences, out-of-the-body experiences, after-death experiences, and so forth. I started out investigating UFOs back in the 60s, and my main emphasis was on the sort of the hardware side of UFOs, and until I began investigating cases like the Andreasen affair, for example, where the UFO seemed to have be equated with these other paranormal phenomena.
And that's kind of the way I started out with my radio show. I was really only interested in the nuts and bolts. I wanted to find one and go knock on the door and see if anybody'd open it. And there seems to be many levels to this UFO investigation scene.
Yeah, Dr. Hynek, Dr. Jacques Vallée, and other of my peers started out with a hardware hypothesis, and I was dismayed when they sort of drifted into the other side of the UFO problem, until I began investigating cases that seemed to indicate that there was more to this than just entities from another solar system. It seems to me that we're dealing with something that comes from an alternate reality that coexists with us in the same space, perhaps. You have UFOs, for example. Take a radar visual sighting. You'll see a UFO at point A. Radar will pick it up. The human eye will see the UFO at point A, and all of a sudden, both the UFO seen by the human eye and on radar just disappears, and then appears at point B with no transit line between them. They seem to pop in and pop out of reality. And the entities, if you accept at face value what the entities are able to do, walk through walls, windows, take people, not physically, but in an out-of-the-body type of abduction. All of these things have very, very high strangeness, and I avoided them like the plague until I began investigating cases that exhibited these characteristics, and it was fascinating, especially the Andreasen affair, which was an ongoing investigation for about 20 years, because I wanted to, Dr. Hynek suggested I do sort of an FBI treatment of the case and look at it as a family phenomenon, starting with the Andreasens and their family and the family, their families, their parents and so forth. It was fascinating because one of the things that really intrigued me was the fact that these entities told Betty ahead of time that her two sons were going to die. And I thought to myself, this is incredible. How can I believe such a thing? And she came to my house crying, all upset and so forth because of this. And I thought, well, this was during our investigation. I thought, well, boy, is this investigation, hypnosis, and all the things we're doing to her really causing this problem. But I couldn't calm her down, and the next day her two sons were killed in an automobile accident.
Wow.
Then I came across some other cases. A case where a woman and her baby were driving down a road, and all of a sudden this disc-shaped object appeared beside them. The car lifted off the road just a bit and slid over to the field, and this voice came in her head saying that so-and-so had just been killed she knew of it, but she didn't know him as a friend. And then the car went back on the road again, the UFO left, and she was scared stiff and went home and told her husband about it. He thought it was losing her mind. And then the newspapers came out and said that this guy had been killed. You know, this is so bizarre that when you initially see, when I initially see reports like this that I haven't investigated myself, I say, listen, this is the crazy side of UFOs, which I don't want anything to do with. But when you come across it in your own investigations, especially when someone tells you ahead of time this is going to happen, you say, well, they must know when we're going to die.
That, you know, adds a whole new dimension to, I think you've done some research in the past on near-death experiences, right? Or at least been curious.
In the near-death experiences, you have entities that look very much like the so-called Nordics that seem to be seen sometimes with the greys and the other types of entities. And you ask yourself the question again, these entities that some people see concerning UFO abductions look like something out of the Bible. They're robed. They don't have spacesuits on, but and they're working with these greys. You say to yourself, well, there must be some kind of a connection here.
Now, in the Andrusian affair, you investigated that for quite some time, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And what's the latest there? I mean, is everybody, how does it stand now with those people?
Well, I've talked to them recently, and what's going on is that their daughters, the children, have had these experiences. Of course, the daughter has. Because the mother and dad have, mother and the father have, and then Betty's parents have had those things.
You know, these things seem to run in families, and have you figured out any reason why some of us are touched that way and some aren't?
I don't know. In my own case, my mother and father both had experiences back in the 20s, probably. Then myself, and then my brother, and my aunts. It's a family thing. I have no idea why it is, except that you could say it's analogous to what we do here with studying animals, studying animals over a period of time. The same family. It's hard to know. They almost treat us like we're property. I mean, you take a look at the UFO abductions, the fact that they're taken, that medical exams are given, blood, sperm, ova, scrapings under fingernails, all of this, over and over again, it's almost like maintaining a herd, what we do to cattle here.
Yeah, you know, now that you mentioned it, you're right.
And, you know, I have this sneaking suspicion that we may be property.
Yeah. You know, you talk about that, and one of the first things that I've become aware of, or maybe even accepting, as you said, you hear these stories from other people, and you say, well, that's pretty far out. But, you know, maybe a lot of these ghost stories that we hear, and people seeing ghosts, they're probably UFO connected, don't you think?
Yes, I do. I've come to some really weird possible hypotheses about.
Oh well, I'd love to hear one.
Well, there are cases, for example, where abductees seem to be brought to train on strange instruments for future tasks. But these future tasks aren't here. Why are they being trained on these instruments? You know. We've already mentioned that entities know in advance when humans will die, according to reports by abductees. And entities told Betty, Andreas, and Luca that man is more than flesh and blood, and that we're going to be living again after death in another dimension. These Nordic-type robed UFO entities look exactly like tall human beings, so it would almost seem that there is because I'm kind of a connection between us and them. Statistically speaking, you wouldn't think that someone from another planet would look exactly like us. We seem to be related to them. All of these things seem to indicate that there's a connection here.
Quite an educated man. One of the things I noticed in your resume that jumped out, since you do paranormal investigations and UFO investigations, I thought it was interesting that you were born in Salem, Massachusetts, and you graduated with a BA from Gordon College, I guess in liberal arts, and then went on for quite a level of other stuff, and we'll get into, you have quite a background, is all I'm trying to say. And so, you can't say that you, you're far out there, because you're actually in academia. You have quite a few credentials. So, I am listening to what you say, even though I'm not ready to accept it completely, but I keep hearing things like this over and over and over again. Yeah, I may be forced to. I mean, that's probably the way you looked at it.
Yeah, well, we had a scientist here and at Boston University, I guess it was, he was a real skeptic. He was off the dig. We were on the air together, and we were investigating. We were talking about the first investigation that I had done concerning a huge, huge object that looked like that. Well, he wouldn't have compared it to a hamburger, like a hamburger with the middle of it filled with lights that came right up, almost up to their window after it was falling, power line, and so forth. Well, he was very skeptical on the air, but then I happened to catch him take the witnesses aside from everybody. He was interviewing them and extremely interested in what they were having to say, asking all the signs, shape. All of, just like a UFO investigator. I think to myself, hey, what's going on here? You know, on the air, he's, you know, giving these people a hard time, and then afterwards he's over there just like investigating the sighting. And so,
yeah. Now, are you, I know you're an amateur astronomer. In fact, didn't you help build a planetarium or something one time?
In 1970, I built a planetarium and observatory down in Massachusetts, and I ran it for over 20 years. I had school groups, all kinds of groups coming to the planetarium observatory. I put up an observatory up here. We moved up here about 3 years ago, and I teach adult ed at the Kennebunk adult education program. I teach classes on unidentified flying objects, UFOs, life after life, gardening, all kinds of courses.
Fantastic.
They have a home classroom here, and they send students here, so it's a nice situation for someone retired.
How do your students, I guess the UFO course they're interested in, and naturally they wouldn't enroll on it, but
there's a great interest. And what I find is that my courses on UFOs, especially UFO abduction phenomenon, I find people, and also on the life after life, people who've had these experiences use these courses as a support group. They come, and after a while they don't say too much at first, but then people start speaking to share things, and it's amazing how after one or two begin to share things, it opens up and everybody's trusting each other and discussing these experiences. It's a catharsis for them, and it's a catharsis for me to be able to talk to them about my own experiences, because people like myself and like many other people, it's like living in two different worlds. It's almost schizophrenic. It's the fact that you investigate these things, you experience these things, and yet you can't talk to other people because it's a different reality than they can't fathom.
Well, many people have encounters with these images, which they chalk up as a ghost, as we talked about, and maybe actually they're seeing the past or the future or whatever. They don't talk to anyone about it.
The Loch Ness Monster and the pterodactyls and so forth, and Bigfoot and so forth, could very well be like that.
You have any Bigfoot sightings up in the woods of Maine?
Not here, but down in Massachusetts. And again, this is interesting. I investigated one sighting where a person, a couple, lived in a fairly remote area in Massachusetts. And they kept on having their garbage dumped over, and they put the dogs out to see if they could scare whoever was doing it. The dogs would go out, and they were really scared. And the man was home at one time when this happened, and he decided it was some kids doing it. And they were probably having a party down at his pond, so he took a gun. He was going to scare them. He was down this path to the pond, and he came upon this hairy creature, 8 or 9 feet tall. And he took one look at that, and started running back to the house, and firing over his shoulder into the house, calling the police. That came to my attention. At the same time, there were UFO sightings going on, and I got a call from the state police during this time, same time frame, and giving some UFO reports to look into. They said, oh, by the way, are you interested in Bigfoot? I thought, that's strange. I just had this Bigfoot sighting. And they said, well, we had a Bigfoot sighting of some kids that were sliding in the hill, not too far away from the same town, not too far away from where this guy lived. And the kids reported the same thing, same description. And again, there were UFO sightings.
You know, a couple of things about Bigfoot sightings that interest me, and I'm sure our audience as well, and you probably as well, is, first of all, there does seem to be a UFO connection sometimes. There always seem to be around when UFOs are there. Not always, but a lot of times.
Yeah. Down in Pennsylvania, one of our investigated a lot of Bigfoot sightings.
And the other thing about Bigfoot that I'm very interested in is dogs seem to be terrified of this creature. Do you have any theories about or hypotheses?
No, a friend of mine thinks that maybe there's something that goes out and collects things for the Euphonauts or whatever, but I really don't know. I investigated a few. There was a fellow on a motorcycle with his girlfriend up in Vermont. They went off this path down to a pond. They have a picnic. And while they're having a picnic, they look across the pond, and there's this Bigfoot creature looking at them. So the guy starts throwing stones at it. The Bigfoot starts to wade towards them, and they jump on the motorcycle. They leave everything behind. But another case, right in my home, right next to my hometown in Wenham, in Hamilton, Massachusetts, where a mother was getting her two sons ready to for school. And with new construction near Woods and Miles River. And the kids, while the mother was doing something in the house, went outside on the deck just to look at the scene of the house they just moved in. And they saw these five hairy creatures that looked something like monkeys, but they walked upright, looking at the new construction. They ran in and told the mother came home. So, and these creatures looked up at them, but in a straight line, marched into the woods. So she called the police. So as I interviewed them, and I interviewed the police chief, and the police chief said, you know, he felt that they saw something. He checked around to see if any of the zoos around lost some animals or something. He felt that the woman was, you know, upright, would never lie, and the kids seemed to be, you know, all excited about what they'd seen. Years later, I talked to the kids, his grown-up. One of the kids is grown-up. He's gave me the same story. So very, very bizarre things. You wonder, you know.
Yeah, what's going on, right? Our time is going on. It may be not a reality for everyone, but it is for us. basically, in summing this up, are you telling me you're not going to write any more books?
I probably may write some more books, but I promised my family that I would keep away from the UFO subject per se. But you see, in Synchrophile, I was able to bring UFOs into it on the side, but I didn't actually brought in some of my own experiences. But the subject wasn't UFOs. I think they got away with it, but whether I can continue getting away with it.
Okay, well, as we close the show, we'll go over the names of the books and how they can get them, and then on our website, we have a link over to you, and it's
website.
Yes, we do. We have a link to it. So, now, the interesting thing that I want to close the show with, or at least it's interesting to me, is what about the entities themselves? We talked a little bit about the types. What about the little grays? What do you think, where do they fit into this thing?
Well, Betty was told that the grays were actually mature human fetuses that were bred. In fact, she was actually shown them in these artificial wombs being grown and used as workers to work in the oxygen atmosphere that we live in. And they do look very fetal. Yeah, they have mongoloid eyes, they have diminutive nose, ears, and slit for a mouth. And they essentially told Betty that they were related to us. And then when you look at the Nordics, if you put a business suit on a Nordic and had him walk down the street in New York City, no one would think he was an alien.
True.
It seemed that. But then again, you look at some of the that are seen, the praying mantis, so-called praying mantis type, the insectoid type.
Yes.
The reptilian type.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me they're just variations of life here. Insects, our reptiles, are just some kind of adaptations of what we already have here. They're related to our reptiles. They're related to our insects. And again, there seems to be this relationship, almost a symbiotic relationship between humans and the UFO. And sometimes people, some other researchers have felt that their survival is dependent upon our survival. It's almost like, dragonfly, for example. The larval form of a dragonfly, for example, lives in a dimension of water. And its transformation into a dragonfly, the larval form becomes dragonfly, lives in a dimension of air. Perhaps the dragonflies or the entities are returning to the larval form in the pond and saying, you've polluted the pond, and if this keeps up, there aren't going to be more dragonflies.
That's a good point, and I have noticed one thing with a lot of people that have had contact or abductions or encounters, or however you want to say it. They do come away more interested in the ecology.
Yeah, well, they told Betty that mankind was going to... Betty was asking, well, why are you taking... As she was witnessing a fetus being taken from a surrogate mother, she was asking why this was so. She was really, really upset. And she was told that man is destroying much of nature. This is why they have been taking the form from man. And they were saying that the sperm count... For example, of a man was going to drift life forms were going to become sterile, and not too long, maybe several years after Betty was told this, the studies concerning the tremendous drop of sperm. sperm count in human males came out, studies in this country and other countries, and animals being born deformed and so forth and so on. It could be that there is a symbiotic connection here, and that we're destroying not only ourselves, but we're destroying something that they need. But again, that's all speculation. It's all we can say is really something weird is happening.
Yeah.
And it's outside of our own reality, and all you can do is try to put all the pieces together like a picture puzzle and try to come up with something. But it's like a cow in a field, you know, the cow's in the field, he's in the pasture, he can't get out, and the farmer comes and takes milk, and that milk, look at all the different things that humans do with that milk. The cow has no idea, you know, why he's there, or why she's there, rather, and thinks that, you know, this human being is kind, that feeds her, and so forth and so on, but she has no idea what she's really there for, and what use she can be made of. I think we're in the same situation. It's like a dog, for example. My dog watching me dig in the garden, I'm probably thinking I'm digging for a bone. I mean, we tend to see things through the spectacles or eyeglasses of our own technology and our own belief systems, and we sort of filter all these different things that we see into our own, you know, worldview and so forth. We may not get a clue what's going on. All we can do is make analogies to things that are similar to what's going on.
Yeah, and to carry that one step further, we may not be capable of figuring out what's going on just because of our experience.
That's what the Brookings Institute said about scientists and engineers being confronted to another life form that you know, could visit here. They just wouldn't be able to understand it, and that they would be most impacted. I thought that the fundamentalist sects and religions would be the most affected, but this NASA report said that scientists and engineers would, which really surprised me, but looking it over, I can see how it would be. It would be like, it'd be like a witch doctor all of a sudden being, or taken, the witch doctor that got sick, for example, and was taken aboard more than an aircraft carrier by a helicopter and put in a little situation and seeing all the different instruments and so forth and then being put back into the village. I mean, how could the witch doctor understand all these different things? You know, he has his own way of healing people and so forth, but he has not a clue when you put into a modern situation to be able to understand any of the instruments.
Well, you're very good with analogies, and I like it, and I've enjoyed the hour, and we'll do it again sometime.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jerry.
Okay, thank you very much, Frank. Yeah. Bye.